What do CPAs really have to know about private equity? This is the Issues Watch podcast. I'm your technology host, Sean Steinsmith, and I'm heavily involved in everything to do with blockchain, crypto, RPA, AI, and I'm also honored to be an incoming member of the NGCPA Board of Trustees beginning in June. So I'm really amped on all of that. And I'm really happy to have as my April guest today, a friend, colleague, and really an expert in everything to do with our topic for this episode. And I'm happy to have on the show today with me, Garrett Wagner, who is a founder, CEO, kind of futurist, and who's also possibly from Canada. Garrett, welcome to the show.
Dr. Sean, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. I feel like we've done this before, so we'll do it again.
Right? Yeah, right. Know, weird like that.
It's weird like that. You know, there's always some Canadian jokes, but as I say, I am not officially Canadian. I live in upstate New York, Rochester, which is like 7 to 8 hours from Dr. Sean. And like all good New Yorkers, Dr. Sean lives in New Jersey, considers himself a New Yorker.
Absolutely.
And considers anything outside 45 minutes from New York City not to be part of New York.
Yeah, absolutely right, Garrett.
You'd think as this big blockchain guy and this technology guy, he would be able to, you know, better look at the map and see what New York looks like.
You would think, but.
So Dr. Sean, do you have your own custom New York map that you've just like annexed most of the state? And did you give that?
I do, actually.
So did you give the rest of the state to Canada, or do you like break it up between like Vermont, Pennsylvania, and Canada? I'd be curious to know.
Never heard of those places either, Garrett. So
true New Yorker. The United States revolves around New York City.
Absolutely. All right. I'm trying to get back on track here.
What are we talking about today?
We are actually talking about today, you know, trends and topics in the private equity space as it directly pertains to our industry, right? Right, because obviously there have been tons of headlines out there on private equity firms, venture capitalists allocating capital to our industry, right? And so overall, I was hoping to get some insights from you. Are there overall trends or headlines out there driving how private equity is in turn influencing change in our industry?
Yeah, so there was a big private equity transaction that happened in the fall of 2021 with Eisner Amper New York City that everyone was talking about. And we covered this in depth on one of our shows. You can check it out. You know, we went through the whole history of outside ownership of CPA firms. We talked about different kinds of private equity. What is the difference between private equity, venture capital? We talked to some experts, but super high level. Outside organizations have always looked to the CPA firm community and said, hey, can we buy/invest in a CPA firm to make more money? Simple as that. Investors are always looking at that angle, and we're no different. We're an industry that can be invested in. And right now it's become popular again with the whole Eisner Amper influx, and then private equity firms have cash, they're looking to invest, and they're looking at our vertical. And one of the rubs is, ultimately, we've talked about this, it's never worked before in the past. No outside ownership has ever worked. And they've always ended rather badly. Quite badly, actually. Sometimes a little bit of a comical way. I believe it was H&R Block that used to own a lot of CPA firms. And on the earnings call, the CEO dumped the accounting firms. And he was like, this underperforming asset will be removed from our balance sheet, or, you know, something along those lines. Like
that, you know, that is rough.
Just being dumped with negative words like that on an earnings call is not the way to do it. Because that's the rub. As accounting firms, if anyone that's in one right now knows or doesn't know, okay, we make money and we make decent money, but traditional growth for us, look at firms, any firms across the country, any size, unless you're growing through mergers and mergers, we're not seeing huge growth. Even that growth through a merger, it's artificial inflated growth where one firm's revenue disappears and it's added to another one. And that's the big trend with this private equity space for CPA firms is, hey, can you, quote unquote, sell a part of your firm or get private equity funding in some way? And can you take your firm from earning from 2% growth to 20% growth to 25% growth? Because ultimately a private equity firm is not going to invest in a CPA firm, whether it's $1 million or $1 billion. They're not going to invest that money to make 2 or 3% return. That is not an adequate return for them for their money. They will go elsewhere. They want to make a bigger return than that. So if you're a CPA firm and you get this private equity money, can you take it and fund exponential growth? And that's that ultimate rub. And in most cases, you can't. It's very, very hard for us to do that. You know, the one exception would be if you're a CPA firm and you want to buy 6 or 7 related companies that don't do tax and accounting work, that do like IT consulting, healthcare consulting, robotic process automation, et cetera, et cetera. And you want to one big swoop buy 7 different companies. So you can now, instead of selling just one thing, tax services and accounting services, you can sell 7 things to all these companies and your revenue is going to grow exponentially. Okay, maybe that's going to work, but that's a lot. That's a lot. On the flip side, if you're just going to buy, if you're going to get private equity money to buy additional CPA firms, same thing. You're not getting enough exponential growth because while your top line revenue might, let's say it doubles, you acquire someone that's almost your size. Guess what? Your bottom line revenue, what's left, that net income, we're accountants, we know that, isn't skyrocketing 20%. That bottom line net income is going to move a couple percentage points, but that's it. You know, private equity money, they want to make that money. So how can that firm generate more money so the private equity makes their side and the partners in the firm are still making their cut? It's just a hard financial model to figure out, and no one has to date.
Interesting. So then it kind of strikes me like the firms that on paper, at least, right, who are best able to manage external funding or M&A are firms and practices who aren't just trying to do more tax returns, more audits, more valuation work, but that are actually going out and are buying up other practices or other businesses. Correct.
And what the rub is, you've got to look at, if you're an equity firm owner right now, it's okay, let's say I want to buy 5 unrelated companies that do different forms of consulting to sell my clients. Okay. And let's say I need $5 million to buy those companies. What's it going to cost me to get a traditional loan to buy those 5 companies? What's my cost of capital? What's my cost of capital if I get private equity money? And guess what? And we cover this in our session. The cost of private equity capital is always higher than a loan, than a bank loan. The difference is there's much less collateral with private equity money and they're taking a much bigger risk. So if you can get a loan for $5 million at 5%, okay. But if you can't get that loan, maybe you can get $5 million at 25%. Okay. Now, can you make enough profit there to make it worthwhile to pay them back and to not get them happy? But hey, we're accountants. That's how the math of these transactions work. Private equity money is not cheap money. It is some of the most expensive money out there with the most strings attached. So there's risks involved you got to be aware of.
That's a excellent point that I have not heard too much about. That obviously in the headlines we hear about private equity money here, there, you know, millions here, billions there, but that on the other end of those transactions there are, you know, higher interest rates, more terms, conditions, all the rest. And so, you know.
Yeah, so Dr. Sean, so with that, let's say a typical CPA firm right now, they're very much run by committees. Partners have a lot of say.
Okay.
So there could be a motion before in the firm of, let's take your baby, blockchain. You know, should this firm get into blockchain? And the partners are just like, the majority are like, no, we're out. This is, I don't want anything to do with
this. Unbelievable. Yeah.
This is ridiculous, right? Well, guess what the private equity firm's going to do? They're going to say, blockchain's a high growth space. You can earn a lot of revenue doing blockchain consulting. Do it. Period. Do it. Why? because the private equity money invested a lot of money in you, not to let you kind of like make your own decisions and not make money because you don't want to do it. They invested all that money with you so they can get rich, which means guess what? You're going to get into blockchain. You're going to get into AI consulting. You're going to get into and do whatever they say you have to do. And sometimes these downsides, sometimes it's also as simple as your private equity firm says, well, guess what? Your lease is coming up next year on your fancy offices in Manhattan. And, you know, you're paying whatever, X a square foot. Well, guess what? You're moving to Jersey and you're going to pay a third of that a square foot because we need to make more money. And the decision's not made.
Jersey.
But hypothetically, but that's what comes with this private equity ownership is they can look at a business and just be like, I don't care. I'm not in those offices. What I care about is I invested this money with you to make this return. And if you're not generating more revenue, you're going to cut costs. And maybe that cost cutting becomes, you got to fire 10% of your staff, 20% of your staff. Why? The private equity firm's done the math. They feel like you can sustain your level of activity with less people, less expenses, more revenue to them. Like you said, Dr. Sean, there are strings attached with this. It is not free money.
And so, you know, obviously having all of those terms, conditions, all the rest of that, sort of that higher pressure to actually make money as a business there, not just partners, but as a business, how is that influencing or interacting with the overall sort of mergers and acquisitions that are going on anyway? Is that having a cooling impact or not?
It hasn't yet impacted the traditional M&A cycle in accounting firms. You know, the trends we're still seeing is the same as they were 5 years ago. Supply is going up. More and more partners are getting older. More people are looking to retire. On the flip side, demand has leveled off. Firms are getting pickier and pickier about who they merge in because they've done a lot of mergers that don't work out well. So they're no longer kind of just like doing them to do them. They really want it to be a merger that makes sense from some kind of strategic decision. And then with that, usually for a merger like that, they don't need a lot of outside capital to do that. It's usually going to be finance and equity trade. There's some transactional costs, but even large firms out there, and there's a bunch that talk about this, you know, if you're a large enough firm, you can finance those transactional costs, you know, the new computers, the new equipment pretty easily nowadays to bring in private equity money. Once again, hey, let's say we're a large firm because it cost us $2 million to buy new computers, new equipment to bring in the super large firm. We're expanding to Florida. Well, guess what? We can get a loan nowadays. Interest rates are dirt cheap at 3.5%. Why do we want to sell our soul to private equity at 20 with all these strings attached? We're just going to take that traditional loan.
Understood. And so as a owner and a owner operator of a firm that also had some big alterations made on a sort of operational basis, are there any insights or tactics, tips, ideas that you were able to use in your firm to help sort of train people, to help convey these forthcoming changes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the same thing we help consult a firm on doing this and that we did ourselves. It's twofold. One, you got to recognize that merging the two firms together is almost a full-time job for about 24 months. It takes consistent effort across 24 months to make this happen. On top of the regular job that's there, on top of that, putting time and effort into it and really focusing on the modern principles of leadership, providing autonomy, mastery, and purpose to the work people are doing. It's not enough to show up and be like, hey, good news, there's a party, there's free cake, here's a t-shirt with the new firm logo, like, welcome to the party, just keep doing what you're doing. There'll be changes, you know, got to make it happen right. And you got to lead your people in the way they want to be led so they can be more productive, more engaged employees. And once again, it just takes time and effort. You can't just expect it's going to work because it just happened. It's got to take time and effort on your part.
You know, and ultimately, every industry, be it our industry or other fields out there, mergers, acquisitions, private equity, all these external forces, it honestly always boils down to the people and how you train them, develop them, and have them be ultimately engaged in the process. Absolutely. And absolutely. And to sort of round out our conversation, Garrett, are there any, you know, thoughts or tips for any partners, any firm owners who are either on the hunt for a acquisition or are having conversations with external sources of capital?
Yeah, I mean, I think really if you're on the hunt for this, just be knowledgeable, do your homework. Don't go with blinders on. Really understand that trade-off and that cost of capital, what you're getting and what you're giving up. Understand at the end of the day, unlike a bank, that, you know, the banks exist to make money on their interest rate only. And they can be pretty understanding. They're not going to get involved in your operations. Private equity is a different deal. It's a different beast. They don't mess around. They don't do things by committee. They do things generally based on the numbers of a spreadsheet of how they can make that return in their fund they need to make. And they're not as concerned with the day-to-day operations and dealing with just slow, slow, non-existent change that accounting firms are used to.
Well said, Garrett. You know, that obviously there is a whole bunch going on right now. Headlines, private equity, venture capital, SBAC funding. And it's always critical to understand where the financing is coming from and the impacts of that financing. You, Garrett, Garrett, as always, a pleasure having you on the podcast, and I will absolutely have you back on.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Sean. Always a pleasure.
All right. Thanks, Garrett. And just a few quick items of housekeeping. If you have not joined the Emerging Technologies Interest Group yet, I highly encourage you to do so. It's at njcpa.org/groups. And I'm back to you each and every month with NJCPA Issues Watch podcast episodes talking, you know, tech trends and other big picture trends and concepts out there. And they're all up on njcpa.org/podcast. Thanks and have an awesome day.